Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. Election season 2018 upon us, and of course, everybody is always concerned in this state as we look to electing a new governor about the job climate. And, you know, depending on who you talk to, Governor Rauner and things are getting better and they're great. You talk to Mayor Rahm Emanuel, everything is wonderful in the city of Chicago. And, of course, you talk to anybody who would like to have their job and things are terrible here. So I thought we'd try and get a bit of perspective on this, maybe some facts to kind of back all of this up. So joining me to talk about the existence of jobs, the prospect, the outlook for the job market in our state is Austin Berg. He is the Director of Content Strategy, what a great title, for the Illinois Policy Institute. Austin, welcome to the podcast. I think this you've been on my television show, first time on the podcast. Welcome.
First time on the podcast. Thanks for having me, Paul.
So now I'm going to be up front. I mean, Illinois Policy Institute is not exactly known for its liberal assessment of life. So as you sort of look at the economic standard of things, it's a fairly conservative entity. So let me just start with a question of saying, why is it appropriate and correct that we look through the lens of the Illinois Policy Institute and not perhaps the lens of a more liberal group?
So the data is the data on this, and it's widely available. I encourage anyone to go look it up. You can go to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. You can go to the Illinois Department of Employment Security. The numbers are there, and I would be happy, more than happy, as a person who was born and raised in Illinois to report a rosy jobs picture. That would be great. That would be great for my family all over the state. That would be great for my friends and the people I work with. The fact is it's not, and it's been a really poor business climate, poor jobs climate for a number of years.
So how could it be? We're going to get into some of that, but how could it be that, you know, when Mayor Emanuel or the governor talk about new companies that are coming to Illinois and all this stuff, where's the excitement coming from? Are they making it up, or would they look at the data that you're looking at and simply interpret it differently and see it differently?
So you actually rahm see someone like Rahm Emanuel or even whoever's been in the governor's chair the last few years report the actual statewide jobs numbers in comparison to neighbor states. So it's very easy to go to, say, a ribbon cutting for a new business. Of course, in any dynamic economy, you know, we're a first world country. There's new businesses opening up all the time. But you really need to take a broad look at the ecosystem in general to really get a sense of if people are succeeding or struggling on the whole. And in Illinois, when we compare it to other states, while the national economy is doing quite well, better than it's done in many years, actually, Illinois has not been a part of that success.
So according to job reports, and that's what you're talking about, Illinois doesn't have a healthy climate. And yet our numbers, like in and of themselves, don't seem to be terrible. So talk to me about what job reports are saying and how you are interpreting them to see things as bleak as opposed to better than they were in the past and not optimistic for the future.
So, you know, the things are going to be a little bit better than they were in the past, but it's all about relative growth. So we see jobs growth in Illinois and jobs growth even in Chicago, which is seen as being the booming part of the state. It's booming in Illinois, but Illinois is still lagging behind the rest of the pack. And Chicago is as well. It sees about half the jobs growth of the national average, and the rest of the state outside of Chicago is even worse. It's hard to even look at those numbers. The jobs growth is almost non-existent. Another thing we can look at is the labor force. So who's actually making the choice to put themselves out there and try to work, try to find a job? And Illinois, while the national labor force is increasing, more and more people are entering into the workforce, looking for work, getting a job, planting roots. Illinois, we've actually seen in 2017 the workforce declining, shrinking. So we actually, up to now, I think it's almost up to 100,000 people either dropping out of the workforce, giving up, or getting out for other reasons, maybe aging out or retiring. That's a big problem in the long term when you think about the future of Illinois.
So if that's the case, you know, it's funny, it's triggering a story in my head. I was on the on our morning news last week talking about the tax plan, the Republican tax plan that's worming its way through the Congress. And one of the points that I made was that if the provision regarding SALT, the state and local taxes being deductible, which they currently are, but under the Senate version of the plan will not be, and they're not very healthy under the House version of the plan either, that would really be a problem for states like Illinois, not just Illinois. That would be true in New York, New Jersey, anybody that has like significant taxes. So that was the point I made on the air. When I get back to my desk, and there was an email, I'm not going to say who it was from, but there was an email from somebody, we'll just say significant within the government structure of Illinois. And he said, "Hey, Paul, I just watched you on the air, and I got to tell you," he said, "when you look at Indiana," he said, "Illinois is doing great. Our tax rates, you know, compared to Indiana, are fine." And it was this whole pitch. And I responded back to this person basically saying, "I don't live in Indiana. I live here. And so while life might be better here than Indiana, it's still kind of hurtful here when you feel the 5% basically increase in taxes that the state put on us. You know, I live in the city of Chicago, so don't even talk about the increases the city's been hitting us with over the last year or two. And of course, you know, the county's probably going to hit us with something at some point." Is that, Austin, the reason that things are as bad as they are? Are we talking about taxes and fees? And if we are, then why is it that I get emails like the one I just talked about, which seem to suggest but life is better here than in other surrounding states?
Yeah, that's a great question. I feel like that's sort of a cop-out. No one is saying – it's sort of preying on people's worst instincts, right? Like, oh, you don't want to be like Indiana. Well, look at the numbers. If you're a blue-collar manufacturing worker, you would want to take Indiana all day over Illinois. They're actually catching – Indiana is getting to the point where, as a much smaller state, they're gaining on us in terms of total manufacturing jobs. If you're a middle-class homeowner, you'd much rather have your property taxes capped at 1% of your home value instead of living in somewhere, say, in the south suburbs of Chicago, where you're seeing rates, you know, 5, 6% effective rates, effectively sucking out all the equity of your home at the biggest investment that most people will make in their entire lives. So I think that's just sort of a tone-deaf critique, in my opinion. And the numbers are still really, even setting aside Indiana, the numbers are really bad. In September, Chicago was the only city in Illinois to experience private sector jobs growth. In 12 other metro areas, they saw jobs losses in the private sector. And we see the workforce dropout problem. And you make a good point on the comparisons, especially the SALT issue. So even if Illinoisans, let's say, on the whole, come out ahead under the new tax plan, with the elimination of that SALT deduction, the comparative assessment when you're someone saying, okay, I could looking at my options in Wisconsin, Indiana, Missouri, Iowa, if you're looking at those options, Illinois is going to stick out like a sore thumb. We're still going to be comparatively worse, and that's really what matters, those decisions on the margin where people are going to raise their families, plant roots, try to create jobs.
You made the comment that Indiana's certainly beating us in the manufacturing world. I know that's one of the areas that Illinois is struggling. Are there areas like hospitality and others where Illinois is doing okay?
Certainly. So we have...
How about hospitality?
The problem is what types of jobs are really booming. So in Chicago, you see, especially in the Loop downtown, you see a growth in white-collar jobs. You see all this hullabaloo about Amazon coming. Those are the types of jobs that Chicago has done an okay job of fostering. There are the tech scene in Chicago so far is good. The restaurant scene, you may have seen the Condé Nast list. We're number one. Now, what has the city's response been to those two things? First, the tech scene. Chicago is one of the only cities to levy this insane streaming tax on services like Spotify and Netflix and Amazon Web Services.
I'm not happy about those.
Take restaurants, for instance. So the ROM is going to jack up permitting fees for restaurants. So you see two of these industries that are kind of our golden goose. You see what type of attitude the city has towards those businesses, and let alone food trucks. Those are all but extinct now in Chicago as part of the culinary landscape because of taxes and regulations. So you really see what's struggling across the state are small businesses. In advance of Small Business Saturday, I think that's November 25th, that's something people really need to think about. Most of our jobs growth, a vast majority, I believe 75% of the net jobs growth in Illinois in 2016 was from businesses with fewer than 50 employees.
And I know statistically, when you look at the dates, as I've seen them from 1993 to 2011, small businesses were about 64% of the net new jobs across the country. Are those statistics not comparable to what's happening in our state then?
So we have, we're in line with the nation on that. And we even see in 2016, as I said, it's an even higher proportion coming from small businesses. Nationally, obviously, they're very important, but especially in Illinois. So you look at when you're trying to say what industries are doing well, what aren't doing so well, it's increasingly in Illinois, the big guys getting the tax breaks, the big guys complaining and getting their needs met, specifically, not structural changes, just special favors given to special actors, but not really a healthy jobs climate across the board, and we see that in the data.
There's an article you actually sent me to about Felony Franks. Now, I remember Felony Franks. I remember doing some stuff about Felony Franks. This was a guy who had a hot dog stand, but he hired felons, former felons. He hired people that were released from jail in a recognition of the fact that other people weren't hiring them. It's really a cool thing that he was doing. How are they doing?
They just shut down. There were, as you said, and I've spoken to a lot of the folks that worked there. Dino Andrews is the man who was running that business, an awesome guy. It was a pillar of the Oak Park community, and now they're shutting down. And what did they cite? Cost of doing business. We can't make it work anymore. And that's just – so, of course, when the corner store shuts down, that's something that has a ripple effect, that people are going to lose their jobs, and that's sad for their families. A place like Felony Franks really – doing an enormous public good for Illinois with all the problem we have with recidivism, people returning to prison within 3 years of release, half of the time are going back to prison in that vicious, vicious cycle. A business like Felony Franks, a job, can do so much to stop that. And in Illinois, they were not welcome. They were forced out by high property taxes. They were forced out by the cost of doing business. And that's a really, really sad thing. That's just one example. And I talked to tons of small business owners in the Chicago area, all over the state, who see a similar story.
So, Austin, if the reason for this climate that we're living in is the high levels of tax, the regulations, the fees, and all of that, and it's hard to see that it wouldn't be responsible, to say that we need to get rid of that stuff, we need to lower the fees, you would have a mayor or a governor look at you and say, we appreciate that, I get it, but we have a state and a city to run. So therefore, what you'd have to do is cut. And I don't know, have you identified, I know for the longest time, years ago, I got very frustrated when I looked at the 11 planes that the state fleet had. Everybody talked about not being able to cut anything, and there were no budget cuts. And then you saw there were 11 state planes. The speaker had his own plane. Everybody got their own plane, in Springfield. And I thought, well, there's an interesting thing to cut. And I started talking a lot about it on my show. I don't know that I can take credit for it, but I do know that when Governor Quinn was governor, he then authorized the sale of several of those planes. I'd like to think I kind of influenced that maybe a little bit, or the show did. But what do you expect them to do? Are there millions and billions of hidden things like that, those silly perks, that the legislators don't want us to know about? Or is this a matter of saying, no, you know what, the cuts are going to hurt, but you got to do them?
So the issue here is it's a larger attitude, in my opinion. None of the government can function. We cannot pay for any of these services for people who need them. We cannot pay for teachers. We cannot pay for firefighters. We cannot pay for police without the productive business activity that is taxed. So when you see someone like Felony Franks, or a larger business like Hoist Lift Truck, I often mention, 500 manufacturing jobs moving from South Cook County over to Indiana, when that leaves, that is a social service issue, because we cannot continue. Clearly, we cannot fund those things without the productive efforts of those workers, of those business owners. So it's one and the same, and they should not be pitted against each other in that way. And especially, so we always talk about the budget. We haven't had a balanced budget in over a decade. They're largely, you would not see a structural deficit in Illinois if Illinois simply fixed its people problem, people leaving the state. And until lawmakers realize that fostering a business, a good growing business climate is in fact a budget issue. Mike Madigan likes to say, for instance, any type of pro-growth reform is not a budget issue, so state government shouldn't be talking about it. That's absurd. I talked to one business owner, just an illustrative example. His name's Aaron Moore. He was born and raised in the south suburbs of Chicago. He started a painting business in Bellwood. In Bellwood, as you may know, is one of the most poor communities, not just in the Chicago area, but in the state. He started a small painting business, service painting business. He hires about 20 to 40 guys at any given time. Totally bootstrapped it, did it on his own. He bought a building in Bellwood because he wanted to make that community better. Over 4 years, he's paid $150,000 in property taxes on a building he bought for $170,000. He has a tenant. He sold part of his space in the building that he bought to a renter, another business. Their entire rent can't cover just his property tax bill. If you can't make businesses want to come to areas like Bellwood in Illinois, that's bad for everybody. And that's something that lawmakers need to take into account when they're talking about these things. It's not just a numbers game, it's people.
We get ready for a governor's election. And, I know you're not in the business really, I'm going to put you in the business sort of blaming things. But so do things get better if Bruce Rauner gets a second term? Or do they get better if we get a Democratic governor in there working with it? Or are we just not on a good path at all?
Again, I think it's part of a larger culture shift. It's going to depend on what policies pass and which policies fail, regardless of who's pushing them. So, for instance, with a Republican governor, you had the largest permanent income tax hike in state history because the legislature overrode that veto. And that's going to be extremely burdensome if we want to talk about small businesses. That corporate tax rate going up is just a punch in the gut for so many businesses across the state. And until you have lawmakers who are held accountable for those votes, people can expect more of the same. Now, one encouraging note, I believe 15 House Republicans voted for that tax hike, extremely destructive. 9 of them have already announced that they will not be running for reelection. So just 9-10 months into the General Assembly, into their two-year term, they're already saying, I'm getting out.
Yeah. So arguably, they may have voted the way they felt they needed to, knowing it would cost them their job.
Well, you could argue they were going to try to get away with it, and the public backlash was such that they could not avoid it. And that's the way I would see it. And I think that does represent a sea change in Illinois, frankly. And I think people will be held accountable for their votes like that. And that's really the only way that things are going to change in the long term.
So it seems like the answer here is it's not so much even like who gets to be governor, but it's what kind of programs and bills the legislature passes, which would be signed by a governor or not. And so people, if people get angry with this topic and want to do something about it, it sounds like the answer is call your state rep, call your state senator. Those are the folks who have to make things happen.
Certainly. And I don't want to downplay the role of the governor in shaping economic policy. Of course, that's a big deal. But Illinois' problems are much bigger than one man or woman in the governor's seat can solve.
I agree with you on that. Absolutely. Austin Berg, director of content strategy over at the Illinois Policy Institute. Thanks for shedding light. You know, this is kind of tough stuff. People's eyes glaze over with this kind of stuff, but you explain it well and kept it interesting. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Paul.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Sweet chocolate, malted candy, gumdrops, anything you want. You've come to the right man because I'm the candy man.
Well, Sammy Davis Jr. may have been the candy man, along, of course, with Willy Wonka. But if you want to go to the right place to enjoy a world of chocolates and candy, among other things, you want to go to the World of Chocolate. This truly is one of Chicago's probably the premier World AIDS Day event, and it's December 1st coming up at Revel Fulton Market. It's an annual event that benefits the AIDS Foundation of Chicago, and I got to tell you, I'm sure we all wish that AIDS was out of our lives and nobody had to live with HIV and it was just gone. But since it isn't, knowing that there is this really cool event that happens once a year, and I get to it as often as I can, it's really something you don't want to miss. We're going to talk about it. And so to chat about it is the master of the event, Dustin Ehrenstrup. He's the senior manager of fundraising events. And Dustin, I think you've been on the podcast before, so I will welcome you back.
Thank you, Paul. call. I'm excited to be back.
So first of all, as I said, I wish we didn't have to have this event, right, or that we could do it for other purposes. But we do it for the AIDS Foundation of Chicago. So for people who aren't sure, tell me about the mission of the foundation.
You know, the AIDS Foundation, what our mission is to we hope to see an AIDS-free generation one day, you know, to your point.
Yeah.
Right now we don't have an AIDS-free generation, and that's really what our end goal is. And so we work in prevention, case management, housing, advocacy, and education to, you know, let people know more about HIV because it does still exist. I think a lot of people from our generation oftentimes think that, you know, it's gone. It's something that happened in the 80s and 90s, and now we've moved on beyond that, and that's simply not the case. And so I think that that's one thing that we really strive to do here. And then, you know, we mobilize communities. We create equity and justice for people living with HIV and vulnerable to HIV and chronic diseases.
You know, and the AIDS Foundation of Chicago, it's been around for like 30 years. I mean, this is not a new organization by any means. And so, and I know you haven't been with them for 30 years, but you really have to note that the role of the foundation 30 years ago has evolved and very different than it is today for all the reasons you've just said, which is
right.
That now people that, you know, AIDS is no longer a death sentence, or in most cases it's not. It becomes a chronic disease, but that doesn't mean we don't want to prevent people from even being exposed to it.
Correct. Yeah. You know, that's one of our biggest things is making sure that people who are living with HIV have access to health care and are able to, you know, navigate through the very complicated healthcare systems that we have here, and have access to information about prevention, you know, to either transmit to their partners, and then also have access to information, educate people about the right medications that people can take to continue living and thriving.
You know, I also want to clear up something that this is an old stereotype, but mm-hmm. I still think it's out there in some people's minds. Let's address it. A lot of people look at AIDS and say, well, that's a gay man's disease.
Yeah, and, you know, it's definitely not, unfortunately. You know, we all know the origins of HIV and AIDS here in the U.S. It started out as GRID, which was the gay-related immune deficiency disease. And, you know, it's definitely, it's changed. And so our mission therein has also changed. And so, you know, we really go and work with you know, the communities we prioritize, which we definitely see in the African-American Latino communities, where we see a higher prevalence of HIV to this day.
And it affects women and men.
Correct.
And people of all backgrounds. And this is not about sexual orientation. I mean, not anymore.
Right.
I mean, this is if it ever
yeah.
was, this is just something that, you know, is prevalent around the world, or certainly around
right.
even in this country. And that's what this event is all about. Let's talk about the event, because it is coming up on December 1st. And like I said, it's a great event. Now, you, prior to being at Revel Fulton Market, you had been in other locations. And then I think just last year was the first time you ended up at Revel. Really different kind of space, cool kind of space. Tell my listeners about why this is such a cool space, and in fact, you're going back to it.
Yeah, this is our second year back at Revel. We had been in a few different places before, but last year was our first year doing at Revel Fulton Market, and it's a newer venue in the West Loop that has a little bit more of an industrial feel to it. It's a big raw space. It's got a giant room where we can host all 21 of our chocolatiers from across the city. And it hosts all 1,200 people who attend the event. And so it's conveniently located close to downtown, right close to the train. And this year we're really excited to have it on a Friday, so people don't have to then call off work. We've typically had it on Thursdays, and this year World AIDS Day lands on a Friday, so we wanted to continue commemorating World AIDS Day with this event. And so we moved the event to a Friday, which has been met with it's been met very well.
I would think so.
Very excited to have it on a Friday night to really make it there.
Because you don't want to eat 47 pounds of chocolate and have to wake up the next morning and go to work. And I got to tell you, as much as people think, and I'm a I love chocolate. So many people love chocolate. And you know, you can't eat as much as you might think you can. But what I like about this, and what I want people kind of understand. First of all, you have, and I remember, and I know they're coming back, Terry's Toffee. And, right. Yeah, and Fred's, a Barney's, New York, Chicago, Dove Chocolate Discovery. So there's so many different, there's restaurants and so many different things there. But what people understand is this is not a matter of going from table to table and checking out everybody's Hershey bar. You've got the most unique, I mean, there are alcoholic drinks with chocolate base to them. I don't remember last year, but a couple of years ago, I remember somebody was doing chocolate dipped beef. I had never had that before, yeah. And I was a bit frightened about it, but it was really good.
Yeah, you know, last year there was a rabbit dish that was made with like a cocoa glaze.
I can't do that.
And there was a confit, and you know, we have a couple of people who make a couple of our chocolatiers who make libations, and so you know, they pour almost a full martini, a chocolate martini. We have a white chocolate martini. This year we have a Mexican hot cocoa martini and a white chocolate martini and a bunch of other different things that our chocolatiers compete for some of the best, to be the best martini that they have. Yeah.
So you're responsible for, you know, these events coming together and all of that. And it seems for people who come there, not that it's random, but you kind of look around and say, oh, they're here and they're here and here's the Hilton and here's so-and-so. Is there a method to the madness? Do you start off when you're planning and working with your staff to say, we want to have this kind of reach out, this kind of, for lack of a better word, variety or distribution among the kinds of things being offered to people?
You know, we do. We actually have a really, really strong host committee and our chocolate chairs. So our planning committee, you know, which is comprised of great stakeholders to the AIDS Foundation of Chicago. And they work with us probably starting back in June to start doing some outreach to folks. You know, the event has been happening for almost 15 years now. And so we have some tried and true people who have been with us from the beginning. But one of the things that we try and do is really diversify both the number of chocolatiers that we have and the variety of it. And so you notice that we have CH Distillery, who is one of our exclusive spirit provider for this event. They are making, you know, the chocolate martinis. We also have like Fred's at Barney's of New York. We have Terry's Toffee, who, if anybody's from Chicago, knows.
Oh, we all know Terry's. Love it.
Yeah, delicious stuff. And so we have a breadth of different chocolatiers. I think it's really important to showcase the diversity of Chicago restaurants, Chicago hotels, Chicago businesses of all shapes and sizes.
And what I love, too, is as you walk around, I went there, first of all, lots of WGN fans there. That's always nice to see. Folks saying hi, which is great. But at the same time, it's not as though you go up to these tables and, you know, people are not friendly to you or something like that. The point is, even the chocolatiers, the people that are behind the tables, they want to have a good time, too. So, you know, you find yourself chatting with them and kidding around with them and trying something.
Exactly,
they'll say, hey, you
got
to try this. It's that social interaction thing that's part of the night as well.
Well, and one of the things that I think is really great is, like I said, we have 1,200 people who attend the event, and that doesn't even count the chocolatiers who are there working. And so when you go up to a chocolatier station, you're able to chat with the head chef of the Sofitel and speak with them about what they're doing and why they chose to do this. And, you know, they've got, you know, they're like, you know, baking chocolate waffles on the spot and putting them up and serving them out to folks. And so they want to know, how is it? What do you think? And I think it's a great time to get interaction with those people as well.
And for people who want to attend, I'm sure we got everybody's taste palates going now. Again, it is December 1st. And what time does the event start?
The event starts at 6 p.m. And it goes until 9 p.m. And so you get a full 3 hours to and come hungry, because in addition to chocolate, we also serve food, and we also have a great bar package as well.
So let's talk a little bit about costs, where people want to get tickets. How do they get them? Because I do know there's various sponsorship levels. Now, I don't know, you know, how many listeners are ready to step in at a sponsor level, but let's talk about what, you know, anybody who wants to attend should be able to do.
So aidschicago.org/chocolate. is going to be the landing page for you to go and get your tickets. We have two different ticket levels, the general admission ticket, which includes admission, all the chocolate samples that you can possibly eat.
Or shove in your pockets, but that's
yeah, right. A buffet dinner and a hosted bar. Those tickets start at $135. And then we also have our VIP tickets, which start at $235, and that includes a private entrance, because, you know, when you have 1,200 people coming at once, it's somewhat of a congested
time. You can get a little busy.
a little busy, but the VIP ticket holders scoot right in with a VIP entrance and are greeted with a specialty cocktail by CH Distillery. And they also have access to the Mile High Club this year, which is...
Better explain that one.
So every year we have a different theme. This year our theme is International Affair. And so, you know, what we're doing is we are challenging our chocolatiers to think globally as World AIDS Day, as the event falls on World AIDS Day and HIV and AIDS is a global epidemic. We really wanted to tie that in and have a travel theme with this year's event. And so the fact that we have a VIP lounge, we wanted to tie it in with that theme. We called it the Mile High Club. And so that gives you access to a private buffet and your own bar as well.
And does this event, by the way, do you know, does this happen in New York, in L.A.? I mean, is this kind of Chicago-centric, or is this something that does occur in other places?
It is Chicago-centric, yeah. We are the only one who do this particular event. And like I said, we, you know, as the AIDS Foundation of Chicago, we wanted to reach out to local hotels, to local businesses to showcase the culinary skills of Chicago.
And how great that is. I'm sure people fly in to do this because, and by the way, that's another good idea of having it on a Friday, because I know if I had company coming in, this is the weekend to tell them to come in, because you'd say Friday night, let's go on over to the World of Chocolate at Revel Fulton Market and let's kick the weekend off the right way.
You know, you said it best, because for $135, you have to think you can have all the drinks you want, all the dessert you want, dinner is covered, and typically that's, you know, I would spend more than that on a Friday night any day. And then to know that it goes to the AIDS Foundation of Chicago, which is fighting for health equity and justice in the city, you're able to then meet and mingle with a bunch of local Chicago folks, it's a really great way to spend a Friday night.
Absolutely. And I'll say one last thing, which is, you know, for those people that we are getting towards the end of the year, deductible, folks, this $135, if you're, in case you're trying to calculate how many pieces of chocolate you have to eat in order to match that, or how many drinks you got to have, or that dinner you're going to enjoy, which, by the way, the dinner's great. I remember that. But here's the thing. This is a deductible anyway. You're making a donation to a charity. So that's what's great. Arguably, won't call it free, but arguably I will say you're paying for this, having a great night out with friends, and it's a charitable deduction, and you're helping people, Dustin, as you have said, so very important. And what a great event this is. I get excited about it every year, and the people that are there just have such a great time, such an eclectic mixture of people as well. Everything you can think of is at that event, and they're just having a great time.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, it's we have music, entertainment, you know, like we said, all the chocolate you can imagine. And one thing that we talked about is that some of the businesses are starting their holiday parties. So if you're a company, if you're a business owner or you're a manager and you're looking, what are we going to do for our holiday party?
Yeah.
We have tons of people who say, you know what, we're going to buy a group of tickets and this is going to be our holiday party for our staff. And it's a great way to you know, bond with folks and it going to a great cause.
What a fantastic idea. And by the way, what I thought you were also going to say was if I want to plan a Christmas party for the company or something, and I'm looking for some folks to potentially be a part of it or cater it, there's my chance to try all sorts of folks out, because a lot of these chefs are there. They've got their business cards. And you may be able say, this is one of the best drinks I've ever had. What are you doing on December, whatever? Because we want you to come to the Christmas party. We want you to present, be part of our Christmas party. It's another way to, and write it off that way too. A million ways to write this thing off.
Yeah. It's a multi-beneficiary event.
Yeah.
It not only benefits the AIDS Foundation and people living with HIV, but also you never know who you'll meet there.
This is very true. You might even meet WGN people. People did last year. I know Sean Lewis was there. I was there.
Some WGN people.
What's that?
Guaranteed you'll meet WGN.
Yeah, you better believe it. The World of Chocolate. This is Chicago's premier World's AIDS Day event. And if you hadn't heard of it, this is the year to check it out. Once again, Friday, December 1st. It means it's not a school night at Revel Fulton Market. And the website, again, is aidschicago.org/. I really don't know the difference between a /and a /. But can you use either one, or it's got to be the /?
You know, I don't really know. I would say that's not my strong suit.
Okay, so pick a slash, forward, backwards, whatever, but one of those ways, and then you put in the word chocolate, and you're going to get there, and certainly get a ticket for this event. And by the way, if you can you do the VIP ticket? I think you should, because it just, again, having been there and seeing the private, I was not a snob. I was there talking to people, but there is the nicer room and places to kind of hang around and have a really, really classy night with your friends. Dustin Erickstrup, the senior manager of fundraising events, congratulations again, and I hope you break a leg, as we say in the theater world.
Thank you,
on another great event on December 1st. I'm sure it's going to break all records.
Awesome. Looking forward to seeing you there.
All right. Take care.
Thanks.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.